Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of At the Elephants. I'm your host. I'm Rob Morris. We're doing another one. It's the week of Thanksgiving, everybody. If that means something to you and it makes you happy, then great. I historically don't really give a shit about Thanksgiving, and I don't eat any of the food on Thanksgiving. That's kind of a weird thing about me. Long story. Not that interesting, but you know who is interesting? You know what is interesting is my dear friend Ellie Barone. Today on At the Elephants, man, we got a hell of an episode. I'm really, really excited to share this with you guys. I haven't seen Ellie in a long time. We're going to talk a little bit about it on the episode, but we went to school together. We were friends while we were there. We collaborated together quite a number of times. It was always awesome. And we graduated around the same time, like a year apart or something like that, and went our separate ways. And I haven't seen her. And I know what the hell she's been doing this whole time. And that was 2014. So 2013, maybe even, because that's when I left. And so it's been almost 10 years. It's been a really long time. And to hear the story of what she's been up to and, you know, the journey she's been on was amazing to me. And it was, endearing to me and, very encouraging and inspirational because I think, it's important to for everybody to hear this. I don't even want to spoil anything further. I will say this because she asked me to, and only because she asked me to, because I'm not normally about doing this kind of thing. But she mentioned wanting to offer a trigger warning for people with eating disorders and trauma around addiction and things like that. Normally I would say, hey, look, this is At the Elephants and you never know what the hell you're going to hear on this program, and it's not cleaned up for anybody. If you've been listening to this show or watching it for a long time, you'll know it's not something that gets cut. It's really a sit down. I hit record and we go. And that's what I usually publish, almost the entire thing. Anyone coming on the show only has to watch or listen to a few episodes to learn that that's the style. And I just let it be what it is because all the stories are important and I want to make sure that we are telling them and letting them be told by the people who experience them and let it be what it is. You know, if you're carrying around traumas, I usually find that that's something that you have to manage already. So I don't want to have every episode be like a list of disclaimers or trigger warnings or things that, you know, hey, by the way, this is all the stuff you're about to encounter. But with that in mind, and with the focus being on letting the stories be told by the people themselves, she mentions it. She mentions wanting to have this conversation prefaced with that. And so to honor that, here's your preface. Here's your trigger warning. We're going to talk about eating disorders, and we're going to talk about taking time in a really private way to deal with the shame that can come along with that. So if that's tough for you, check out something else maybe today. But I would encourage anybody who has any experience with this or with people in their lives going through this problem to give this episode a listen. It's pretty light, you know. I wouldn't say we go really deep into detail about that particular thing, but it is a motivating factor in a lot of the story that you're about to hear. So this conversation is about so much more than that as well. And I really hope you enjoy this episode. I actually had Ellie crash on my couch for the night when she did this. And it was kind of a joke I made on social media when she was saying she was looking for a couch to stay on. I was like, if you do this show, you can sleep on my couch. So she was allowed to sleep here for one night. That was the deal. That's all she gets for free because she did one episode. But it was so awesome to catch up with my friend and find out what she's been up to. She's so talented. I mean every nice thing I say to her face in this episode. I'm saying it now with her not here. I mean it all very much. She's incredibly talented and a very generous and kind person who I'm happy to know. So please enjoy this episode and enjoy my chat with my dear friend Ellie Barone.
Really?
Yeah. Well, no, not always.
Why? I want...
No, there's plenty of times when they just don't.
Oh, damn.
Yeah. And then some people got famous and changed their phone numbers.
I feel so bad because I just change my phone number. I just do it.
And I've never done it. I've had the same one since sophomore year of high school.
Oh my God. Like 2004. Well, I always thought people would reach out to me on Instagram if they needed me. But then people were getting pissy at me last time I saw them.
Is that true?
Yeah.
About like not being able to see you and talk to you?
Well, they'd just be like, I texted you. And I didn't think you liked me anymore.
I'm going to move you a little. Are you comfortable with that?
Yeah, move me. Yeah,
do a little blocking here. And you said you've never like talked into a microphone on like a show
really
before.
I can't really sit here. I gotta be here.
We don't have to be there because here's the cool thing.
Okay.
This moves pretty freely. So as long as you're about this far away at most, like two fists, like make two fists. That's like as far away as you want to be from it. And you
so
can
I can be
closer.
Here.
Yeah. And then I'll put this like
that. Is that two fists?
Yeah. You don't have to go back any further. You can be closer than two fists, but farther
this
is,
great. Is
a little
This is wunderbar.
We've been connected on social media the whole time we haven't seen each other. I've seen you in like 8 or 9 years.
I know.
We've been connected, and I feel like I, other than occasionally, and it's been a while, but other than occasionally seeing a video of you like singing, which is one of my favorite things on this earth, I get super excited, and I'm like, oh shit, there's another video of her singing. Shut up. And I like put my headphones in. I want to listen to your voice so badly. Thanks. But even that, I'm like, is she in a band? Is this for an album? Is this for like fun? Is this like a project? Is she in a TV show? Like, I don't, there's never any context. I was telling my wife this too. I was like, I'll see like you do like a dope ass photo shoot. You look fucking gorgeous. And it's like, you know, usually some kind of like, it's usually very like rock and roll. It looks very like alt and cool. And I'm like, does she just have a friend who's a photographer? Or was this for like a thing? Or is it for a portfolio? Like, and there's usually a caption that's like four words that tell me nothing about what the fuck it is. And so I'm left to like kind of guess. I didn't even know you lived in New York this whole time. I was like, you could have been anywhere.
I don't.
You don't?
I just moved there in August.
Oh shit. Okay.
I mean, I'll just start from the beginning.
Please.
So at UNCSA, which was some of my favorite years of my life, I think you get really spoiled at, you know, a conservatory program where you're grouped together with a bunch of like-minded souls who are extremely sensitive and passionate about the world that they live in.
Yeah.
And who are incredibly talented.
And you did the high school program first.
And I did the high school program first. And then I did 4 years at UNCSA, and I just had some of the best years of my life. It was definitely, you know, I'm who I am today because I went to UNCSA.
Same. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be doing this fucking podcast about the school if I didn't.
Remember how you did that?
Yeah, I know.
Doing that for 8 years.
It's insane. I mean, I wish consistently, but I've taken big breaks from it. But yeah, everybody has a different experience. I mean, there's over 60 episodes of this show, but everybody who's watching or listening to this, you can go hear all the different perspectives.
Oh, we're starting?
Yeah.
Wow, it was so seamless. I'm going to tell you, you're really good at this because that was so seamless.
Thank you.
Yeah, it was so conversational. I had no idea we started.
It really is intentional. It's not conscious anymore because I've been doing it so long. But years ago, I stopped being like, are you ready to go? Like, because then, but then they adjust in their chair and then the new podcast version of them comes out.
Did I adjust?
No. You did it. You did a little. You did
a cucumber
side to the back. It was
cool as a cucumber.
Absolutely, very smooth. Pointing out that you didn't know we started was less smooth than it normally is, because you know you could have just rolled with it.
Oh, I could have.
I'm not mad about it because now I get to show off and take the compliment.
Yeah, I gave you a compliment. Yeah,
I appreciate it.
I bet
it.
You're going to keep that in.
Yeah, 100%.
So UNCSA, it was great. Am I that one or that? It was great.
You're over here.
And I, you know, when you are an actor, you're asked to do things that you're asked to, you know, delve into people's lives and emotions that aren't necessarily, you know, your own experience or could be an absolute reflection of your own trauma. So a lot of my work after leaving UNCSA has been really a mental health journey.
Okay.
Things came up at UNCSA, you know, trauma from my childhood that I just never addressed properly, never had avenues growing up. Mental health was not talked about in my family.
Sure.
It was not talked about in my family, still not talked about in my family. And I really crumbled at UNCSA, not because of the work I was doing, because I was born to be an actor. I know this, a performer, a creator. It just was, it was asking me to address some things that I, first of all, I had, didn't even know that, you know, affected me. Mm. And I didn't have a proper outlet for it or the proper help for it.
Was that right away in like the high school program? Did that start early college or like later? Like when did you really start feeling like, because I imagine, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but I would imagine with what you just described, there's a point when you're like, oh, I'm just in acting school. This is kind of weird. We're doing exercises. I wonder what these feelings are. And then there's a point when you're like, there's something else happening here.
For me, acting has always been spiritual.
Okay.
Always.
What does that mean for you?
I feel like acting, theater in general, it's really like the synthesis of all art forms, right?
Okay.
You got poetry, music. It's like it's one of the greatest expressions and reflections of the human condition. And I do believe it's like a divine connection to whatever universal truth, whatever that is for anyone. I believe that the acting does reach towards that. I forgot the question.
Well, the question was just like, at what point in being at school did you feel like, this is not a show about like, what, you know, let's talk about school because people weren't there with us, so it can feel kind of esoteric. But when you talk about the journey you've been on overall as a performer and it really getting cracked open there, was there a specific experience or like a moment when you were like, this is tapping into something other than just making me a better actor? This is tapping into who I am in a serious way. Because like you said, you weren't talking about mental health at home.
Yeah.
You weren't, you know, you didn't grow up going to therapy and stuff like that?
No.
Me either.
Drama was my therapy. Storytelling was my therapy. I got the validation I needed that I didn't get from my parents, from my teachers and my colleagues. And I felt like I was doing something really important.
Yeah.
And I don't know, living my purpose. And I do remember there was a specific moment in the high school program. We were kind of asked to delve into an emotional, something that happened emotionally in our life that we wanted to express through kind of avant-garde. You know, Kelly Maxner, his style of theater was very, what's the word for it?
I think avant-garde is definitely appropriate. It was
movement-based.
Very movement-based because he came from choreography and dance.
Yeah.
And so a lot of his stuff kind of came out of letting music and letting movement create the storytelling. And it didn't always have a very clean beginning and end. It was, I felt like a lot of times, especially when you'd see like, he would do this project in intensive arts with the first years that was this like long, he would take the whole class and make like this segmented story. And it wasn't, I mean, I'm sure it was for him as he created it, but as you watch it, it wasn't like a super clear linear story. It was like vignettes, It's like he worked in vignettes 100%. And they were very much driven by movement, driven by music and feelings more than it was like, let me come downstage and Tennessee Williams this shit and tell you what's going on. It was not doing that.
Yeah. There was something that happened in that workshop when we were doing movement and we were exploring something that happened to us in childhood, just something that was a pivotal moment in our lives. And I had the first real expression of like emotional honesty, and it was the biggest release I had ever had in my life. And it just became almost like addictive. I was like, oh my God, it felt like therapy for me.
Yeah.
And, you know, thinking back at it, I'm like, actually, was that like self-flagellation a little bit? Maybe it was a little unhealthy in the way that I explored that trauma, because it wasn't, you know, I was really young and I didn't know what I was doing.
The therapy is a byproduct.
Yeah.
It is not what you set out to do. And as a result, we talk about this on this show all the time.
Yeah.
It isn't therapy. It feels like it. It can be therapeutic.
Yes.
And it has byproducts as a result of doing very introspective work and being vulnerable. But the difference between that and real therapy is that that thing that you're trying to get out of it. And at the end of the day, if you go through a therapeutic experience, good, maybe, interesting. Yeah. But that is not why we're doing the show. The audience isn't coming to see you go to therapy.
No.
That's not what they, and they may even be like, if you told them that's what they're coming to see tonight, they'd be like, we're going to go see a movie and not go see that play where someone has therapy. That doesn't sound fun.
No, definitely not. But I think I became... It just felt like that outlet that I needed. Yeah. And I just didn't realize that was probably not healthy for me. And so at UNCSA, I felt amazing in so many ways. And then I think it started catching up with me, that trauma I was running from. Mm. And by the end of fourth year, I had developed an eating disorder that was just... We should probably put some type of warning in this one.
Sure. I mean,
just for anyone who struggles with mental health, eating disorders, anything like that, because it just really just ate away at me slowly. And when I left UNCSA, like I went to New York City for about 2 months. Every rest of my class moved to New York City.
Yeah.
I stayed probably in my apartment that entire time. Called my mom. I was like, I got to get help because I'm not going to make it. I'm just not going to make it. And I spent about 4 or 5 months in eating disorder clinic and, you know.
Like a live-in clinic where you're staying there every
day? Yeah, I had binge eating disorder. Like the first, it definitely evolved into several different numbing mechanisms for me to just like heal and process through that trauma. And I just was just not emotionally or spiritually well. And I knew in order for me to do what I wanted to do in this life, which was to be honest and tell other people's stories to the best of my ability, I had to be physically well.
Yeah,
and I just wasn't at that time. So I took many, many years off to do that because recovery is not linear.
Right.
And it's not like, oh, you spend 2 months or 3 or 4, you know, working on yourself and then you're healed. You're good.
Of course not.
It's unfortunately not like that.
It's
very much a journey. And the more you go through it, kind of the more you uncover. It's kind of like an onion. You keep peeling it back a little bit.
Figure out why. You figure out what led you there. And I think that, you know, I hate to say it, but it's the absolute truth. I mean, your journey is unique because they all are. However, the eating disorder thing is a school of the arts badge on the fucking thing.
Yeah.
You know,
it feels like it's almost
more people than I don't know about that. I feel like I think the sometimes results of eating disorders can be celebrated, but the disorder itself is almost purely quiet and untalked about.
So
it was not a thing that people are talking about.
I was deeply ashamed.
I watched, you know, it's crazy to me because I definitely feel for you, Zay, and I've talked to people about this before on the show and otherwise, because it is so prominent, not just in the drama school, in the dance school, in the other areas. It's definitely a thing that is all over the place. I mean, in ballet, my God, you know, the amount of pressure that's put on them to stay in a certain size is insane. And it's tremendously tough. I had kind of the opposite relationship where being at school for me was like the first time I was around people who were treating their bodies with respect. Not everyone was universally, but I grew up in Texas with a bunch of people that we didn't know anything about nutrition. We didn't know anything about being healthy. And while there was a lot of unhealthy behavior at School of the Arts when it came to food and stuff, I grew up really overweight. I had a terrible relationship to food and binge eating as a source of solving my depression and all of that growing up. When I got to School of the Arts, it was like, at least there were some people who were like, man, I'm kind of bummed out. Let's go for a bike ride, or let's go for a walk, or let's go do something physical. And I hadn't experienced that yet. And I saw both things happening. I saw some people getting in the best shape of their lives and the healthiest shape of their life. When I say best shape, I don't mean fucking skinny. I mean best shape. Yeah. I saw that, and that was happening to me. And then I saw the other side, and God bless it for the women. So many of the women, you look at their freshman picture and their senior picture from the drama school, and it's, you can see they're one way or another, they're going through something because they don't look the same. You can see it on them. And it's so tough because another thing, again, that we talk about on this program, Ellie, is as much as we love the school and we think of it as a place where we're like, we wouldn't be who we are. It gave us the tools to be who we
really
want to be.
It was the community.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't teaching us how to take care of ourselves.
No.
That was not part of the training.
No.
It was teaching you how to be the best. It was teaching you how to work the hardest.
Yep.
But it wasn't teaching you. And again, I always make this disclaimer for the new season and all this stuff. I don't know what's going on there now. Things have changed a lot. Things have changed as far as diversity. Things have changed as far, obviously, as far as leadership is completely different. So I'm not speaking to how things are at School of the Arts now. I wouldn't know how to do that. I'm speaking to how it was when we were there. And this is in the early 2000s, leading up to, you know, the kind of aughts and into the teens. And it was not a focus of the program other than don't drink coffee, drink tea, you know, don't hurt your voice. But it wasn't like relationship to food, rest, self-care. These things were not talked about. It was on you to figure it out. And if you didn't, they were breaking you apart and not always building you back up.
Oh, no. And it was obvious when someone was struggling
at
that school.
Yeah.
And no one helped me.
I hate that.
I know.
And I wish it's something we could have talked about too.
I know. Well, that's where my shame, that's my own journey, the shame. Because eating disorders in general, it's a very, you're ashamed of it. I kept it so secret from my own class.
Yeah.
I literally told them the reason I was going away and wasn't going to be pursuing acting was I had other issues with like other substances because and I didn't. That is how ashamed I was.
You would rather them think you have like a drug problem than an eating problem.
Yeah, that's how ashamed I was of my own truth.
That's wild to me.
I know. Isn't that so sad that I felt that alone?
I don't know if it's sad because, and I don't mean sad in a like judgmental way. It is a sad thing to hear for sure. But it's not a sad thing for me in a judgmental way because it's very eye-opening to say that was the issue that you... that you were dealing with and that you didn't want to share with everybody. And
I know. And they're all lovely people. And they would have, if I had felt comfortable sharing that, I know they would have embraced me.
Of course.
Because that is, I mean, when you go to UNCSA, no matter where you go, I mean, I haven't seen you in probably 8-9 years and you'll always be family to me.
Absolutely.
The things that we got to experience and do together, some of my favorite, you know, moments of my life. And
full disclosure, I always tell everybody kind of what my relationship is with the people on this show. Mm-hmm. You and anyone watching who's been on this show or who I've talked to is my friend from the school. Don't take this the wrong way. you were absolutely one of my favorite performers. I mean, people, but performers at school, period. I cast wow. you in more shit than most other people I worked with. You were in my third year and fourth year directing projects. I didn't want to do a fucking directing project without you. God. It's true.
I know. I'm so moved by that. You were my favorite director to work with.
It's so sweet.
No, I'm not just saying that.
I really appreciate that. And the things you would say to me in rehearsals would make me feel like I was good at it. And it wasn't just because you were kissing ass. You would give me the most sincere compliments. I remember to this day, we were doing How I Learned to Drive. We were working on a scene together. And I, as a director, am very big to like, get on stage with you and kind of figure out a moment as if I'm another character. This is kind of I approach it as an actor too. And you would say that you would like stop rehearsals and be like, why don't you act?
Yeah. I'm still frustrated that I'm still frustrated. I'm like, why are you need to be, cause you were just first of all, you're just like multi-talented, multi-hyphenated talented person. But I always thought that you were just so grounded and real. And I was like, this just comes so easily to you. And so you're just such a natural talent. And then you're my favorite director because you knew how to speak to actors because that was your innate gift. You're innately talented as an actor. So working
you made me want to act. Not just the things you would say, but yeah, to this day. No, I will do something with you right now. We will turn these cameras off, point them in another direction and do a scene.
I need you to start saying, I'm trying to think, I've literally blanked on all the plays and movies I've ever seen in my life. I'm like, literally perform that right now.
It would be okay, wonderful.
Yeah, you'd be great in whatever I was going to say, but I couldn't think of anything. I know you'd be amazing.
It would be great. Well, we have to get back to, not just kissing each other's ass as much as we love each other and do this show. First of all, I'm going to get you a tissue because I love you and I want you to have one.
Oh, God. I know. I'm a little weeping willow.
No, it's okay. I should have them on the fucking table.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you so much.
Of course, darling.
Thank you so much.
Of course.
Well, it's just, you know what? It's, you know, I knew this stuff was going to come up when I agreed to do this, because it is my truth.
Yeah.
And it's still,
and thank you
still
for the vulnerability to share it with everybody, because it goes a long way.
Mental health should not be stigmatized. We need to have an open conversation about it, especially as artists. We're asked to do things that, you know, we're human beings. We're not robots.
Yeah.
And
they don't make accountants do this shit.
God, no. Fuck my accountant, by the way. Never mind. Anyways, sorry. A little shout out to you. Tax season. Okay. I think it needs to be just an open dialogue about it. It's really important because I know that there's going to be someone who listens to this or watches this, maybe not even that, who feels this way and has never talked about it with anyone or has shame about it or has felt alone about this and this might help them. I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
I reached out to UNCSA probably about a year after I went to that Eden
sort of
clinic.
You got the help that you needed.
And I was like, hey, I want to be a resource for anyone who is struggling at that school. And of course, I'm sure that there is like, well, we're not going to like do that. I'm sure that there's rules and regulations about getting people involved with someone else's mental health. I get that, but I wanted to be there for people because really no one was there when.
Yeah,
when
but
I
it's
needed
borderline
it.
Irresponsible for them to administer the kinds of training that they do without also offering the resources, which again, maybe you guys are doing this now. Yeah. If you're listening and you work at the school or some shit, and you're like screaming, like, we do that. We have a liaison officer with the whatever the fuck. Maybe you do.
Yep.
I don't do that research. But yeah, it's crucial. They need that. And they need someone saying,
like, some things that happened in acting classes. I was like, nope, that was a moment where they needed to bring someone in. Because there's things that were very, you know, that were brought up that were very triggering. We're young kids. You know, I'm 30 now. When I look back at me at 18, oh my God, that's a baby. When I look at 18-year-olds, I'm like, oh my God, you just like came out of the amniotic sac. You have amniotic fluid all over you still. You're like a baby. You don't know anything. You don't know who you are. Your greatest period of growth is probably going to be your Saturn
while you're
return.
There crying on the floor in voice class.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, it's who you are at that time is not who you're going to be you're constantly evolving.
Of course.
Constantly.
We would hope so.
Please evolve. That is our whole purpose of being here on this planet, is to learn and grow and just love.
Anyways, I push against that kind of stuff all the time, in that I feel like a lot of people lean on, to put it very simply, like, oh no, I am who I am, or this is who I am, as an excuse to like not grow up, as an excuse to not grow past things.
No.
And it's tough to watch other people go through that, especially when it's like our journeys have been, you know, walk in the park.
Yeah. You need to constantly be assessing yourself and taking in information and learning and growing from other people.
So you got the program that you went to, you stayed at the clinic.
And then because recovery is not linear, you know, I didn't like heal overnight. I really had to take many, many years to feel like I could even do the work that I wanted to do.
Right.
Which was, you know, act. And, but that business, like the business itself has always deterred me because,
Feels gross.
It's not rooted in my values. I'm a very private person too. So now there's like a social media aspect. We talked about that before we started talking now about like my presence on social media is very touch and go, because I feel like it represents someone I was 5 minutes ago. It's not who I am at the moment, but it lives forever on the internet.
Can I give you just, because I recently talked to my best friend, Brandon Harris, about this.
Oh my God, Brandon Harris.
He's my best friend since fifth grade. He was my best man at my wedding. And, you know, we catch up regularly, and it's been tough because he's lived in New York like this whole time, and I've been out here, and it feels like it's like a distant cousin at this point. He's still my best friend, but he's someone that I don't live my life with, which is really hard. But we were talking recently because he's kind of the same way. He's very private. He's not big on social media. And he's not really an introvert by any means. He is big personality.
Love people.
Lots of energy. Yeah. Everybody really digs him. He's one of those people that like is often the host of the party where, you know, everybody is going to his place. And we were talking about social media, and I was saying like, I feel like we're of a specific age of people that got caught in between two worlds of social media. And I think there is a possibility where people like him and myself and you can let go of what it kind of started as and try to find a way to use it to our advantage in a way that doesn't make us uncomfortable. And what I mean by that is social media started, to put it plainly, with like, I'm going to see this movie. Here's a picture of my dog. Here's my life through a lens.
I look at my feed. That's me scrolling, by the way. I look at my feed and I'm like, it was all inanimate objects.
Sure.
It was all like, oh my God, a church. Well,
especially Instagram started as a photography app. It was all about taking fucking pictures and showing everyone, oh, look, I could take an artsy thing and put a filter and do that.
Yeah.
We are, I think, as being like, you know, millennial, whatever, like early 30s, we're kind of stuck in that, like, isn't that what it's for? And if I'm going to use it, don't I owe the app and the followers a window into my personal shit?
Yeah.
And no, you fucking don't.
And no.
You can make it whatever the fuck you want it to be.
It
can be simply one thing that you're interested in life. You know, fucking Legos. Let's say like building fucking Legos. It could purely be pictures and videos of you doing Legos, and you never have to show your partner or your kids or your acting thing. It can be whatever the fuck you want it to be, and it can exist for whatever purpose you want it to do. If you want it to help grow your like brand as an actor, it can do that. You have to find a way to share your experiences in that world, but you don't owe someone like a me and my boo going to see a movie. Like, you don't have to do that shit.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be that. And I feel like when I talked to Brandon, he was like, I don't want to live my life on the internet. And I was like, you don't have to do that.
You don't have to.
There's other ways to utilize it, you know?
And I think you found a really great balance of that.
I try.
You know, yeah. I mean, you treat it like a business, and
yeah,
And I think that's important. And a lot of the UNCSA alums who have really blown up on social media are using it as a business. It's a tool.
Yeah.
It's an absolute tool. You don't know their social security. You don't know where they grew up. And they didn't have to share that information, but you know who they are. You get a sense of who they are.
Exactly.
But I think it's really smart. I think I'm probably just not naturally, like I just naturally don't know where I'd fit even in that world.
Sure.
So I feel like I would need to be representing myself.
Yeah.
And because I am just a very introspective person who's like, I don't know. I'm going to regret posting that. I don't know. Like a constant, I just like talk myself out of even posting at all.
Well, I can't speak about the general public, but I can tell you firsthand, especially because ever since we, you know, were communicating a few weeks ago about you coming yeah. to stay here and do this, I mean, people fucking love you.
Well, I love them.
Like people love you so much. Like
yeah, I love
I've mentioned to people, you know, hey, I'm going to be talking to this person or this person's doing At the Elephants or this person's coming over. Like, okay, cool. When I said I was going to have you on, people are like, oh my God, Ellie, I love her. Such aww. A great, literally like, quote, such a great person. Such one of my favorite people ever. I mean, I can think of at least half a dozen people that I casually mentioned it to. And I know they all, like me, are waiting for that next piece of content to just see like anything.
I fucking love them. Anything. I don't even know who you're talking about, but
I'll tell you when we cut.
I don't know. That's very, thank you for telling me that.
Yeah.
Thank
I would want to know. That. It's, you know, and it's not just about like vanity. It's about like, I think we all, you know, there's a lot of reasons you would give a shit, but like, I often think one of the only things I really care about is not so much like, do people like me or do people like the thing I made or do people respect me? It's like, do I leave people feeling like I, A, have integrity is a pretty important thing to me. Mm. I would never want people to think like, oh, he's just doing this for this reason. It's always because I'm really tied to whatever choice I'm making. Yeah. I truly believe in it. And I'm like, I'll stick to that shit forever. And if I, you know, I often stick up for like comedians who make jokes people don't like. And I'm like, but we have to fucking stick up with the free speech shit.
We have to.
It's so crucial because as soon as you start telling people what they can and can't say, we're fucked. And I don't care if they said a thing you don't like.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. Like,
also, there is room for people to make mistakes and grow from them. And forgiveness is something I think that we lack a lot.
Yeah. More now, it feels like. Oh, I don't know if it's more, but it feels like
more.
Well,
I feel like Gen Z has really hopped on that bandwagon. Now, there's things that hard line in the sand.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, like murder.
Sure.
Like, let's not do that. If you do that, probably we're going to remember that and feel uncomfy.
Maybe. I mean, it all depends.
Someone's tweet from when they were in high school. Oh my God. We were all doing really, really, really stupid shit in high school. Like chugging 10 beers out of a giant little funnel and telling our mom we were staying at our friend's house when really we were at some dude's house who lives out in the woods.
Right. Getting some wood. Or whatever you might have been doing.
Yeah, getting some wood. Or like, do you know what I mean? Like, high school was sketchy for everyone.
Yeah,
okay?
For sure.
But, and we grow.
Yeah.
We grow and change as people. We need to give people that space to do that because that is our whole point of being here. But I digress.
Yeah, sure. So let's get, because I want to keep knowing what happened to you. After all this time. What got you through that time when you were feeling like you're in recovery and you're getting the resources that you need? At what point and how long did you feel like, all right, let me start dipping my toes back into the work?
This year.
So you want to say probably like 7 years it took?
It took about 7 years.
And what did you spend the 7 years doing?
I found other ways to be a storyteller.
Sure.
And I found other avenues where I could use my natural talents and things that I really valued. So it wasn't like I was just like languishing out like,
Oh, of course.
I was a mental health advocate for the LGBTQIA+ community. And I'm very, very much still a proponent of, you know, raising those voices and giving crucial. People those resources, because a lot of my own trauma was because I was closeted in so many ways. Like I identify as genderqueer, but I use she, they pronouns. You know, I came out initially as a lesbian, and then I found someone who identifies as a man. And so I consider myself bisexual. I don't personally like to label myself just because I'm always learning about myself. Remember, that's my whole thing. I'm learning.
It took me a really long time to be any kind of, and I'm just not loud about it because as much as I feel like it's important to advocate, it's also not, it's not a thing that I feel, I don't feel the effectiveness of it other than admitting very plainly that I consider myself bisexual.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm not constantly screaming it and making it a part of my identity only because it doesn't feel like that big of a part of my identity and it doesn't feel as significant to me. I absolutely love the people who are louder about it because I think it's crucial for people who are younger to hear that loudness and to know that it's okay to deal with whatever. Yeah. I mean, I was one of those kids who like, I got called gay for so long that when I finally was with men, I was like, am I just doing this because people have been screaming fag at me for fucking 20 years?
Yeah, you need to be like, is that eventually why? Like, yeah, I am.
Yeah, I'm fine.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You got it.
With a dick in your hand, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then I was finally like, well, no, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't just do something because someone told me to. That's not in my nature. I'm participating in this because it's interesting to me, because it makes me happy, because it... Yeah. It is fundamentally part of what I'm doing. And I'm married to a cis woman, but I don't lose my attraction to the people I'm attracted to. It doesn't go away.
Well, I just feel like you've never had to really just be like, I need you to see this. This is me, my authentic self. It's not your journey. But
right.
those voices that are amplified, they need to be amplified for a reason. They're like you said,
agreed.
They're going to be kind of the beacons for kids that need kind of that shepherd through really it's still a homophobic world. Like, don't get me wrong. It really much,
lots of progression, but goodness.
Still, I mean, until the boomers, you know,
well, and even depart, there's still like 10 countries in the world where they'll kill you.
I know.
They'll kill you.
And it's just not a safe place right now in the United States for women, people of color.
Absolutely true.
Basically anyone who is marginalized in any,
Kanye. Anyway. It's a,
oh my God, I'm not even joking. I literally knew that Kanye West was going to be brought up. I have no idea why.
I didn't plan it at all.
I don't know why. I'm just, what is it called? A psychic.
Yeah. You were remembering
the
future.
What a controversial figure.
It's tough for me when stuff like that happens.
I'm going to do this. Is this going to be considered ASMR now if I do this?
Do a nice slurpy sip for everyone.
Wait, brought to you by Unicorn and what's this tea? Earl Grey, Bigelow.
I feel better.
I got to do more because that was really nice. That was real nice. Okay.
Get the headphones in.
That was real good. That was real good.
All right, let's get back to you. I get sidetracked.
I was working
too
in the
often.
I know, I do that. I have ADD. So yeah, I was working in the mental health field, specifically working with people with depression and anxiety. I did transcranial magnetic stimulation for patients with depression and anxiety. For those who don't know
what TMS
therapy is, it's a
Is that fancy for electroshock or is it different?
No, it is not electroconvulsive therapy.
Because I don't know the difference at all.
We basically were activating the neurotransmitters in the left prefrontal cortex of the brain.
Okay.
That's like the biggest mood regulator area.
You got to talk to my wife about that while you're here. Because that's her whole, she's studying to all that stuff.
I no longer do it, but I did it for a spell and I just kind of fell into it and I felt like I was helping people. And then I realized that the way I want to give back to this world is not necessarily through therapy because I am such like a sponge and an empath for people that I was like,
were you getting a little overwhelmed with it?
I was getting overwhelmed and because basically I was the right hand man for the psychiatrist and administering treatment for people. And I just, some of the things people have gone through in this life, it's just, it would, It makes me verklempt just thinking about it.
Holy shit, yeah.
It is just unreal. There is always someone who is suffering in a way that you can't even imagine.
Yeah.
And it's just, it really got to me. Like, I'm just thinking about it. I'm just thinking about those people now. I'm like, it wasn't the right path for me just because, you know, I'm at a place right now where my mental health is, and I would like to be able.
I love that.
Yeah, that I feel makes me really so good. And then we went, I felt good for like probably 2-3 years, but then we went through COVID and I was like, well, everyone's sitting on their hands now. We have nothing to do. And now we all have communal trauma. Yay, we're all in our homes and people are dying all around us. Ah.
Yeah.
And that was a tough time. But, you know, I think turning 30, I just had an energy that I haven't felt my entire life. This deep peace, feeling like I can come back to the work 110%. That my vessel is fully formed and ready to do the things that I love to do, which is not just act, you know, writing. I've never directed before. I've directed one thing, you know, something at UNCSA for,
like intensive arts
for arts. But there's, and also I feel like I'm like, I have all this backed up creative energy because I haven't been doing a ton of it.
Right.
Now, granted, I was singing and I was doing a lot of music stuff because music is like, you know, just like acting for me, it comes from my soul. It was just another.
You can hear it.
Aw, thanks.
I mean that.
Thank you.
That's one of the reasons
why I carry
why
a lot
like,
of voices with me when I sing. It's not just me.
I wait every time I get a chance to hear you sing and you're on a short list of people I feel that way about because
thanks.
It, and you know what's great about it other than that it makes me happy? It it is so cool to hear a voice like yours come out of someone who is physically smaller. You have the voice that like, because you're not, like your voice is fucking big.
Really?
Yeah, I feel like when you sing, it has this like depth to it. It has this soul and this depth that is like so big. And anytime I hear, and it's, you're also, your register is lower. And so it's not like, like, I feel like a lot of people I've heard that are like shorter people have these like big, high, like soprano-y voices.
Yeah.
And when you like start a song where you're like down there and I feel it coming from like your chest, I'm like, that juxtaposition to me is like extra fun because it just feels like it is, it feels like it is slowly exploding out of you. Like watching like a video of like a atomic bomb in slow motion.
Wow.
I just made that up, but that's what it feels like. Like, you know, you
I
see the mushroom cloud.
Everything
but it's,
in my way.
It's destructive. No,
it's destructive.
Not what I mean.
You will not survive once you hear me. That's super kind of you to say. No, I think I didn't even realize my voice was low until people started pointing it out. Cause I was trained as a soprano. Like I used to be able to do those arias where people are like whistling up there.
Right.
And
right.
And then
right.
something happened, like my balls dropped and I just like, I don't know what happened. I wish I could say, cause I'm not a smoker or anything, but I just like can talk really low, I guess.
Yeah.
But thank you. I think it's probably cause all the music I listened to growing up.
Sure.
Ella Fitzgerald. I mean, like all the greats.
Etta James.
James. I listen to all the greats. I mean, Celine Dion, she has a crazy register. I listen to her too. Got to count her in there. So it was probably also osmosis.
So you're doing a lot of music.
Are
you like singing with bands? What were you doing music-wise?
I was doing cover bands. And then I started dating someone who was in the music industry and we started working on my own music.
Is that who you're with now?
That's who I'm with now. I've been with someone for 5 years now. We're not married. And they're great. They've been in the music industry forever and they've helped me kind of find that voice. Cause I'm not an instrumentalist in any way. So it's kind of weird. You have all this music inside of you and you don't know how to put it out there. You don't know how to like express it because my instrument is my voice.
Yeah.
My instrument is 100% that. And my hands don't really compute when I tell them to do stuff. I'm like, draw something other than a stick figure. No, it's not going to happen. Try to do like a D major chord. No, my fingers won't reach. Or maybe I also give up. I should probably just like, keep working
it
on
it. It might be that.
La la la. But I think I was just waiting kind of for that opportunity to express myself in that way. So I, you know, I did that, or just singing. It was an avenue. I never intended to go into that industry. I didn't feel like that's where my voice was going, but I just, or my, more my path was leading me, but I love to do it. But really this past year, I felt like this energy from the universe to act again. And I felt like I could. So I called up an agent that I knew in high school, and, you know, I told them I would like to audition.
Back at it.
And I got really, really lucky, and I booked something kind of big, kind of quickly. And
can you talk about it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a guest starring reoccurring role on a Starz channel show called Hightown.
What?
Yeah.
Fuck yeah, dude.
I was very surprised, but you know, I wasn't surprised at what I was cast in, because I totally personify this in my daily life. A prostitute. Crack addict. Okay.
You feel bad that I was going to guess that?
Did you, were you
no,
really?
I was like, of course not.
You know what's so funny? Because I, they loved my look so much. My hair was just a little bit longer, and, you know, I had a little bit of roots going on.
Sure.
It was all blonde, and it looked kind of gross and kind of grimy at the ends. They're like, stop, you look perfect for the role. We're not going to do a thing. And I was like, awesome.
Ouch.
Awesome. So I like stayed, I shot it in Wilmington for about 3 months. And it was really cool process. It's a LGBTQ show. I was playing someone who was queer, and I have no idea when it comes out. I'm in season 3.
Yeah.
I think it's still in post.
Yeah, we'll
I
be looking for it.
I haven't even done ADR for the last episode. So it was super fun. I also was very much like, oh my gosh, I am rusty in this, in what I love to do. So I went to New York in August, and I'm taking a class with Laura Henry, who is fantastic. If you are an actor who is looking to just kind of work on your art in a really safe and beautiful place, she is that safe, beautiful place.
I really hope to get her on the show.
She's awesome.
Yeah.
I did Meisner 1 with her, and now I'm about to do Meisner 2.
Great.
Yeah, she's great. But that is what I'm doing. But, you know, the industry, you just keep auditioning. You just keep auditioning. So we'll see. Nothing is promised, but I have this energy to make my own work too. So
yeah.
It's not like I'm sitting by the phone. I'm like writing and hopefully going to be, you know, UNCSA is an amazing network. Like I ran into someone at a Peter Hedges screening the other day, Grant, UNCSA film. He's
Conversano.
You know, yes. What a lovely human being.
Yeah. He's a good boy.
And it's just, you meet the right people at the right time, and probably will be helping, you know, so many different people. My sister's boyfriend is probably going to be doing music on this short film that I want to film in January. So it's kind of like,
when you say you're making your own stuff, what's that stuff like?
Right. I'm writing, cause I don't have like a big budget. It's just short films right now. And I found myself really drawn to writing comedy, dark comedy.
Good.
Great.
You're so fucking funny.
I don't know. I don't know if I would consider this interview kind of funny. I think how many times do I weep?
Being funny does not mean being funny all the time.
No. I'm a sincere person. So I do find joy in everything, but I'm also like, I can flip that switch really fast.
No,
I'm the
same
I'm
way.
Vulnerable.
I think
I'm
that's
vulnerable.
Why we get along is because I'm exactly the same way. I mean, I'm always looking to make a joke out of something because it makes me more comfortable, not because it's something I'm trying to show off to everyone how funny I am.
Yeah.
And it's one of the reasons why.
So funny. You're the funniest person I know.
No, come on.
You
need to
meet more
people.
Oh my God. I need to meet more people. I just feel like all I do is just, I'm like, here's a compliment. Here's a cop. Well, I mean them. And I also, for people that don't, I haven't seen this amazing person in a very long time. So this is like really long overdue, all these things that I'm saying.
And we talked for like 20 minutes before we started doing this
podcast. Talked for
20
minutes before
podcast.
I rolled in with my backpack and I was like, hi, I'm here.
Right.
And it's interesting. We were also talking about this, how I'm just not someone who's like gets on the phone and calls someone and goes, what's going on in your
life?
Me
either. I wish
but
I was.
But it's not because I don't care about people.
Of course.
It's not because I'm not thinking about them. It's very much like I'm in I'm an immediate person. So if I'm around you, I want to soak in you at that time. I'm an in-person kind of person.
Exactly the same way. And I have talked to
It's more meaningful for me.
It's one of the reasons why I love my wife so much, because she's fucking great at, like, she'll be like, have you heard from Jasmine? And I'm like, no. And it's not that I don't love, I mean, Jasmine's at my wedding party. She is one of my best friends. I love her with all my heart. She's done this show before. She is the best. And I do casually think about her from time to time. I wish I would always text her when I do. And I sometimes do. But she, my wife, is the one who is like, when's the last time you talked to your mom? She's like, when's the last time you talked to, like, she
oh my
makes,
God, thank God
she
for candy.
Keeps me fucking on it. And she's like, well, have you heard from, you know, it's their birthday next month. And I'm like, fucking,
oh my God.
She is keeping it sharp. And I think it's also because she grew up in a really close, like, Korean family that is all out here in LA. They're not spread across the world. They're more now a little bit kind of moving out. But for the first 25 years of her life, it was monthly dinners. Whose birthday is it? All fucking 15 of them, cousins, uncles, everybody seeing each other all the fucking time. And so to them, it's weird to be like, what do you mean you haven't talked to your uncle in 2 months? I'm like, I spent all of being, I was in school for like 4 years, but I was in North Carolina for like 7 years collectively with like the year I got in-state tuition, 4 years of going to school. I left and went to New York. Then I came back because my girlfriend was still in the program. So I lived there again. Like, I lived there for so long. And then the girlfriend I was with, we broke up and she moved away and I stayed for a little while. So I was there for like 7 years and I would see my family at Christmas.
Yeah.
That's it. Like, because they lived in Texas and I just didn't have the money to be flying back and forth all the time.
That's also a thing. That's a very important thing.
Yeah. It was very much a resource thing. It wasn't like I didn't ever want to see them, but to her, I remember even since we've dated, she would be like, oh my God, I haven't talked to my brother in 2 months. I'd be like, I haven't seen my mom in 10 months because it's just like, they live there and I live here and I'm bad at that. And I am. And she's like, you have to give yourself more credit because you're also the kind of person that when you're sitting down at dinner with someone, your fucking phone is upside down. You're not looking at it. You're not thinking about it. You're not getting a fucking text. You are there with that person.
Yeah.
And she's like, that's the trade-off. You're not always immediately, this is what you were just saying, not always immediately conscious of everyone out in the universe. But when I'm sitting here with you,
you're everything.
I'm here with you. Yeah. And you don't have to worry about me being like, oh, what's Jasmine doing? I'm going to do that later when my wife reminds me. right now I'm here with you.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm the same way. I forgot how we got on that, but really. Yeah. So years have gone by and I'm also the type of person, I'm going to pick up where I left off. Like, no time has gone by.
Same.
Because time is relative.
That's goddamn right. Big time.
It ain't real.
It doesn't feel like it's been almost a decade since I've seen you.
No.
At all.
I cannot believe how much time has passed. Really, just, we've only lived on this earth for a literal half blink of an eye. Not even like a full blink.
For sure.
And it's going by faster every year, which is starting to spook me a little bit. Older people told me that was going to happen.
I have a weird theory about that.
What? Oh my God.
Of like why it feels like it's going faster.
Why?
This is going to be a thing because there's no new thoughts, right? Like Aristotle and Socrates came up with everything already. So this is in a book somewhere that I haven't read. But one day I was sitting like and had an epiphany of like why I think because people say that colloquially, people are like, well, you get older, time goes faster. Like you hear it and you hear it. You don't experience it or get it until you do. Mm-hmm. But I started figuring this out in my like mid-20s. I was like, you know what I think it is? This is so weird. And this is like, I was probably like super high when I thought of this. This is such a stony thought. But I was like, take a year, for example, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're 30.
Yeah.
So when you were 5, a year was 20% of your life.
True.
So you think like someone says to you, oh, it's fine. You'll get to do that in a year. You're like, never, you mean?
Yeah.
You mean
for
forever
real.
From now? Because to you, that's 20% of a lifetime. But when you get to 30, now it's only 1/30th of a lifetime. And so you're like, oh, a year? That's only 1/30th of a lifetime. Like, that's fine.
Everyone's having epiphanies listening to this.
I hope so.
They're all going, Oh my God.
And then when you get to 80, someone's like, oh, that'll happen next year. You're like, okay, we'll just wait it out.
Yeah. It'll be like, what, nothing. An hour?
Yeah, basically. Yeah, because you're like, that's 1/80th of a lifetime. That's
that.
Nothing.
Absolutely. That's absolutely
it's, because
what
like
it
you
is.
Said, it's relative. It's literally relative to your whole life. Yeah. And every unit of time, it is faster because it is less time to you.
So to honestly, it doesn't feel like that much time has passed. But when you say the number, you go, that is kind of, well, that's actually a long time.
Yeah.
Because a lot has happened in the world in that span of time.
For
and
sure.
a lot of things can happen literally in one fraction of that. So it's, but that's, I just, that's why I love having this conversation because it really feels like we're back at the elephants. I don't think we ever sat on the elephants together.
Wait, no, I don't think so.
No, maybe we did.
It's possible.
I feel like you probably had some exercise with when we were doing one of your shows where we
probably hopscotch.
Probably hopscotch, where we went out and sat and probably did hopscotch.
Yeah, that does sound right.
Doesn't it feel right? Somewhat?
I think I'd like to, even if it didn't happen, rewrite history in my brain and decide we did do that because that's so romantic.
Boom.
Yeah,
it's there.
It happened.
Wait, do you know what I stumbled across the other day? Do you remember how you had I have that green park bench when you're walking down the street?
Yeah, and I wrote Elsa on it.
Yeah. I found that picture the other day. I'll have to send that to you.
I'm so curious how long it was there because—
Is it gone?
I don't know. But here's the thing. Here's the thing about School of the Arts. As much as they very much embrace art and people doing cool shit, they were not fucking pro like graffiti or put shit on things. They would cover it up all the time. That was like a regular thing.
Graffiti is an art form, but—
Absolutely. Well, they should have fully embraced it and let it be like all over the fucking campus. Yeah. But it also, you know, they want to keep it up and take pictures and put on the website and shit, whatever. And that, so as you walk across like Kudzu Valley and there's that bridge and then there's the huge stairs going up to like the commons, there were these benches that didn't used to be green. And then one year they painted them all green. And in the play that we did together, Hopscotch, she writes her own name, right? Or does he write it?
I haven't read that play. I actually was going to try to find it so I could read it again.
Oh my God. No, I don't like it. That was my final like thought on doing that play.
You
I was
didn't like it.
I loved doing it with you and I thought it was a beautiful thing that we made.
Ben and I
but
really
as a play,
had a good time.
I'm like, no. Just tell us what you're talking about. It's fucking 25 minutes of them like not just saying.
It just feels like it's just the playwright is like, I'm just going to like write a whole play just like
in
beating
Paul
around
Simon
the bush.
Lyrics. Yeah.
Yeah. In Paul Simon lyrics, just beating around the bush. And I'm going to infuriate everyone in the audience.
So they're like, what? So what happened in that? Well, I told you that's why I did the play because I saw Molly Maxner do it with Haley Trider and Ace Jernigan. Mm-hmm. And I was like, not I think I can do it better, but I'm fascinated by the fact that I don't really know what just the fuck happened in this play. So I'm going to do it so that at the very least, by the end of that experience, I'll know what this play is about. And then I got to the end and I was like, oh, I know what it's about. And I think we did a good job. And I don't like this play because I would like to watch a play where they just tell you what happens
at
some point.
At least you gave it a shot.
Yeah.
At least you gave it a shot.
Yeah. I had a good time doing it. Oh, I didn't finish the story. So
right.
In the play, the whole play starts with you coming out on stage and drawing a hopscotch like board, whatever the fuck it's called, the squares. Yeah. And then you start playing hopscotch with the rock. But with a
in
pebble.
In wedges, by the way.
Yes.
I saw those pictures too. I found those pictures. I was like, I was in...
Who trained you to play a prostitute?
Me. Oh, you.
You prepped
both
you for
of,
your
both
Stars
of us. Yeah,
audition.
You did. You prepped me. Oh my God, yeah.
I didn't think about that.
And I looked... I had short hair too.
Yeah.
So I was looking... And I looked rough.
Yeah. That
I'm
was
just
the whole plan.
I'm comfortable playing those dirty characters though. That a lot of... Like, I think... I love playing gender-bending roles. I love playing people who are having dark, complex experiences because
in crisis.
I just identify with them.
Yeah.
We're in crisis. The like things that you couldn't even imagine doing. I want to go there.
Yeah.
But yeah, that.
So you write the name.
What she deals with is like, here.
You write the name. And then I one day was walking around with like a paint marker and I decided I was going to write the name and then like a little heart with the arrow through it. on one of those park benches.
Yeah.
And what blew my mind was how long it was there. I can't believe it would still be there now. But in my head, I'm like, they hate graffiti on this campus. I know they like it. When any person like does an art thing on campus, they're like, okay, that was cute. But then later they come by and scrub it off. It was there for at least several years it was there. And no one ever got rid of it. They just let this random name, which was not even the name of a person on campus. Nope.
That person didn't exist.
No.
Not at all.
And I've got a picture of it somewhere too.
I'll have to send it to you because I have it in a little folder. I organized my life recently with all my pictures. And I was like, this show for this show, this show. Yes, I'll have to send you because I have all those pictures. I don't know who took the production pictures.
They were great.
Yeah, they were great. And I think that they captured the essence of the show. Like, what's happening over there, And what are they talking about?
Sunset that the sun is supposed to set while the play is happening.
That was so beautiful. Yeah.
And it ended up being pretty dark at the end. I don't feel like we transitioned to enough of that like blue pool light that they do when it's dark on stage. It ended up just actually being dark on stage. People were like, I can't really see them. But I actually really loved that because I was like, that's what it's like when you hang out with someone at a sunset when it's not well lit. Some point you're like, where do they like, it's dark. You can't see their faces. So it was a little bit more like realistic.
Yeah. You're Let's just, say it you was like on wanted purpose. To get, yeah, it was on purpose. It was on purpose. It was totally on purpose. Yeah. But that was a little beautiful memory that popped up about you.
I love that.
God, just, yeah, you really are one of my favorite people.
That is so great. I really love that. You're one of my favorite people. I got so excited when you, so this happened, we should tell people you posted on like Instagram being like, can I sleep on someone's couch in Los Angeles on this weekend? And I was like, do the podcast and you can sleep here. Meanwhile, I was like, you can still sleep here if you don't have the podcast.
No, you didn't say that though.
I didn't want to throw out the bluff.
If you do the podcast.
Yeah. I made it transactional first.
Which is very appropriate for me because just coming off the role of a prostitute.
Exactly. So I knew you were in that headspace.
You were going with that. And I was like, oh, phew, he's married.
You'll be ready for a trade.
But then you gave me this, a unicorn. And I was like, no. Okay, you got where I was going with
that. Yeah, 100%. So since you're staying with me and my wife.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God. This is such a dream come true for me because I really didn't know. And apologies to everyone, this is such a personal podcast because a lot of times it's a little bit more surface, like what you've been up to. And this has been such a like personal thing for me. It's hard for me not to get emotional because
you can make me emotional.
Oh, I'm sorry. There's so many people that I spent a long time not being able to see. And I always felt such a connection to you when we were working together. And then because of the stuff that you were going through partially, and also because I was living in different places and traveling.
Yeah.
I've had times when I was like, I wonder if I'll ever see Ellie Barone again.
Oh man.
No, you know, not because of anything like negative, but I'm just like, she clearly, you know, you're kind of on the grid, off the grid, didn't know where you were, what you were up to, where you were living. And I didn't even know. And it wouldn't have worked if I had like visited New York. Would that have been a place to find you? Or would North Carolina have been a place to find? Like, I didn't know even where to look for you. And you said you changed your phone number and chat. So I wouldn't have even been able to like,
I know.
Unless it was Instagram. But
it wasn't me trying to run away from everyone. That. It was me like, I live in this place now. So I changed my area code.
Sure.
And I always assumed, because I'm like the queen of assumption. I'm like, so they'll find me on Instagram.
And if I really would have sought it out, it probably would have happened. But, you know,
I do believe, like, if, you know, what's meant to be is meant to be. So if you needed to find me, like, you were going to find me.
Yeah, for sure.
And I would always be there. Like, the door is always open, you know?
I appreciate that
always.
A lot. It means always, the world always, to me. Always, and I'm so thankful that this random occurrence and trip that you made resulted in us being able to see each other and catch up. And
I know.
You're always, always welcome on my couch, in my life, in the podcast chair, whatever you want to do. And I mean this for real, and I don't think I've said this to anybody in a really long time, but if there is an opportunity at any point, I don't know if it'll be one that I create anytime immediately, but if any opportunity comes up to act with you, you need a director, you need fucking anything, I will.
You're gonna act.
I will do it.
Yeah.
I'll get on camera. I'll get on stage. I'll get on whatever the fuck you want to do. Oh my because God. There's.
We totally need to play a brother sister duo.
That would be excellent.
Wouldn't that be fun?
At like our parents' funeral or something.
We have similar eyes too, so people would be like,
"They'd buy it."
And I change my hair color all the time. I can easily go back to my natural, which is your color.
Or I could, you know, Targaryen it up alike. With you. I think there's a vibe.
Yeah, there's a vibe.
For sure. You have prettier eyes than me.
I don't know.
You do.
I don't have my contacts in, but I think yours are also as gorgeous.
Well, I appreciate that.
Oh, yeah, I can't really see much.
No, but definitely have a vibe.
No, you do. You have great eyes. You have blue eyes, right?
They're like blue-green.
I have blue-green.
Really? I always think of you as having like very blue eyes. Is there green in there?
It's a trick of the light with the, because I have a yellow ring.
I have a little bit of that. I've been told it depends on the shirt I'm wearing. So technically they should be green right now.
Yeah, they kind of look like green blue.
There you go.
So say that one more time that you are going to act because I want to manifest this.
I will.
I would also love to be directed by you and I would love to 100%. Create with you.
It would be great. I would do anything with you as soon as you had, if it was fucking next week, I would do it. But I've been telling my wife for many years, I'm like, I feel like one of those people that I'm going to want to go back to it one day in a really serious way. Yes. Like there's going to be a time when I really, really want it. Cause I've been doing stand up.
You're going to Morgan Freeman it. All Maybe. Of a sudden you're going to be 50 years old and you're going to be like
Jeffrey Rush style.
Yes, Jeffrey Rush. No, and that's the wonderful thing about acting is that you don't need to, you can revisit it at different points in your life.
And I was never going to be, I've played a couple just because the community theater didn't have any choice, but I've never been like a leading man actor. I'm always a character. I'm always one of the, you know, I'm either a comic relief or I'm the friend or I'm the weird uncle or I'm the, you know,
you
something.
You are all of those to me. You are all of those to me at this moment. I was like, you're describing yourself so
hitting
perfectly.
The
you
spectrum.
Have such a great awareness of yourself. Yes, 100%.
Thank you for doing this.
Oh, thank you, Jeffrey Rush, for having me on the show.
Of course. Anytime.
Thank you so much.
I will be your Barbossa. I will be your Peter Sellers, whatever you need. No, I really appreciate you doing it. And I appreciate the vulnerability and tell me what's really been going on with you.
Because that's what's really been going on with me. And we must be real.
Yeah.
In our own safe way, you know?
Yeah,
and
for sure.
Whatever way it's done in stages. Like I wasn't ready to tell my story. I wouldn't have been able to sit here and say what I'm saying now if I hadn't gone through everything and saw it. Big picture and come out on the other side.
Yeah. I'm so glad you have.
I know. I know. Beautiful. It feels like my life has started. Isn't that great?
And a cool
like my
way
life
to end
started.
The show.
I know. Woo. 30, flirty and thriving, baby.
That's so not who you are. 30, flirty and thriving.
Oh. No, for real though. For those who, it gets better at 30, I'm going to tell you.
Yeah, it does.
It's so, like a relief happens, a major just like
when I turned 30, I was like, this is what I wanted.
This is
I talk about this on the show all the time too.
Oh my God.
A lot of people, and I don't have any hate, shame, or judgment for it, but a lot of people hold on to childhood like with their death grip hands. They don't want to let it go into their adulthood. And I think that can have some benefits when it comes to like imagination and playfulness. And there's some stuff there, maybe even some valuable innocence. But for me, I was like 6 and I wanted to be 40. I was like, hate being
a child.
Well,
you're an old soul.
Yeah.
So old souls are kind of like, they already realize, they already innately know. Like,
I'm like being wading through being a child.
Youth is wasted on youth.
Exactly.
Well, however that actual saying goes.
Let's make that the saying.
Yeah, that's what
youth
it's
going to be.
Youth is
wasted on youth.
Youth is wasted on youth because you don't really appreciate it. And then, I don't know, I've always felt like an old lady, like I'm ready to go. 50 is going to be like.
That has also come up like in my family and other people's, like my wife's family, where it's like they're older people who are really like, they have so much fear and shame about being old. They're like, I don't want to take my cane to church or I don't want to show everyone my oxygen tank or I don't want to give. I'm like, bring it on. Bring me the grays. Bring me the tank. Bring me the cane.
I want to know that you lived.
Yes.
I want to know that you lived hard, that you did this life full throttle.
I think anyone watching this knows we're both
going to be that people.
Yeah, we're knocking that out of the park.
Oh, absolutely. Oxygen tank party. 50 years, be there or be square. We're gonna get high.
We don't have to wait,
baby.
Let's get the oxygen tank out now.
I mean, we're in LA. Don't they come to your house now and hook you up?
Yeah.
Give you some drips?
Yeah, usually at 11 p.m. and then 1 a.m. is bath salts.
Dude, I'm fucking dead. That shit's crazy.
It's from the Baldwin Foundation? The Baldwin Foundation does the one.
You're about to get a letter in the mail. You know that Baldwin's team is out there and they're scouring the internet for any bad information. Him and his wife are like,
yeah,
oh my
for
God,
sure.
Someone at the Elephants talking shit about us. Sue him.
Post the clip, you know?
Post
Let's get the views.
Get those views. Ugh. Bye, everyone.